Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
The next guest and somebody I am greatly looking forward to speaking with has the most remarkable story. And it is one of those stories that you that makes no sense, actually. And that's why we wanted to chat. Nikki Goldstein is a Sydney journalist, battled chronic lung disease for years. And in around about 2022, she was in ICU and she wasn't having a very, very good day. It would seem that, in fact, her life was under severe, severe threat. And her daughter saw a rabbi at the hospital, called him over. It was Rabbi Eli Schlanger, and he started to offer some prayers. And within 24 hours, in fact, her lungs began to improve. Doctor said it was a miracle, and she was brought out of a coma. That is really all I wanted to share with you in terms of the story. I wanted to chat to Nikki to actually share some of this and the impact that this has had on her, herself. Nikki, a very, very good morning to you all. Maybe good afternoon to you. Hope you're well.
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me, Howard. It is a remarkable story. It's a crazy story when you tell it. So
yeah, because it makes no sense.
And it's funny how doctors use that word miracle in a kind of ironic sense when they can't find available terminology for when miracles happened happen. And I definitely feel like I experienced a miracle. So, yeah, and I don't think it would have happened if Rabbi Eli Schlanger hadn't wandered into the ICU that day and said prayers. So, yeah,
Absolutely amazing. What was your was there any, what was your connection with religion before this? Obviously identified as Jewish, otherwise nobody would have called the rabbi who was there. But what was the connection like?
Oh, very secular. I mean, you know, I would call myself, you know, maybe an October the 8th Jew. You know, I woke up on October the 7th.
Right,
and went,
I'm with you.
Oh, I'm Jewish. I don't think I knew that before. So nothing religious, and the word God probably would have made me cringe a bit. So I was always interested, and I've been writing, as a journalist, I've been writing about self-help and wellness. So I was familiar with, you know, different mystical traditions, but I'd never looked in my own backyard.
Which is fascinating. And then you get ill. I mean, you had been struggling for a while, right? Take us through a bit of your story.
So I'd had chronic lung disease for about 10 years, and hospital admissions were not unusual for me. I'd get a chest infection. I'd think, okay, a couple of days on IV antibiotics and then I'll be home. But this was, things went pear-shaped very quickly. And within 24 hours of being hospitalised, the head of the ICU came to me one morning and he said, if we don't intubate you in the next hour, you're going to be dead. So, which does quite focus the mind. And I, of course, submitted and went under. And while I was in a coma, that's when Rabbi Eli Schlanger wandered in and said his prayers. And I must say, I didn't, you know, it wasn't like I immediately came out of the coma. It took 24 hours. But things were very different on the other side. I think when you've experienced a near-death experience, as I did, you're not the same person that comes out as when in.
You know, what's, Nikki, so remarkable is, as you're telling your story, I'm thinking of all of, I've had the privilege, horror, I don't even know what the word is because it's too difficult, of speaking to many Nova Festival survivors. And a question I always put to them, because it just somehow feels so relevant, is who was the person that arrived at the Nova Festival versus who was the person that ultimately left the festival? And there's so many echoes of what I'm hearing from you about you're not the same person. You can't be. Who is the Nikki that arrived at that hospital versus the Nikki that left the hospital?
Well, I'm going to answer this in two parts, because there's the Nikki that left the hospital, and that the Nikki that's arrived at the hospital was very ill and, you know, kind of scratching for life.
Mm.
And there was this incredible recovery. But with the recovery came an incredibly improved health. So I went in very sick, came out a lot better, which is not what's supposed to happen
right
when you've survived a massive pneumonia, which is what put me there. So there was that on the health front, but then there's the spiritual aspect, which I was really profoundly changed, mostly by the experience of surviving, but also by my ongoing relationship with Rabbi Eli Schlanger, who decided when I came out of the coma, and literally the first time I met him and I was conscious, he came to my bedside and threw his hands in the air, and he went, "Oh my gosh, you survived!" And
of course, because you weren't aware that he was there. You know, we have this vision of it, but actually, you're not aware of it at the time.
No, that's right. And so he pulled up a chair next to me, and he said, "You know, this is a miracle." And I went, "Yeah, the doctors said it was a miracle." I was kind of a bit dismissive, and he said, "No, I really believe this is, you know, thank Hashem, this is a miracle." And that language that he used with me became an invitation that over the next couple of years of our relationship really invited me to excavate and investigate Judaism in a way that I never had before.
Would you say that your Judaism until this point was really cultural, historic, But even though you looked at spirituality in all sorts of places, there wasn't a real spiritual connection. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I'd say it was the opposite. I was running from it. Mm. You know, I went to a Christian school. My dad had gone to a Catholic school. My mother had gone to a Christian school. We really saw ourselves as fully integrated Jews. And obviously after October the 7th proves that idea a falsehood. But I wasn't looking for spiritual enlightenment or spiritual enrichment from Judaism at all. But that really came as a result of my relationship with Eli. And then, you know, the next part of the story, which obviously the listeners don't know, is that Rabbi Eli was murdered on the 14th of December in the terrible Bondi Beach anti-Semitic attack. And so that relationship was cut short, and very tragically. And you asked me about Nikki before the ICU, Nikki after the ICU, and now there's Nikki post Rabbi Eli's murder. And I think I'm even a different person now than I was 6 months ago after he was killed. And there's a kind of tragic irony and a sort of very bizarre and epic part of this story, which is he saved my life and now I'm saving his legacy. And you can't make this stuff up. It's like, you know, it's crazy. And right from that very minute that I met him when I was conscious in the ICU, he told me that it was his long-term dream to write a book. And wow. I sort of said to him, well, you know what? If I had a dollar for everybody at a dinner party who said to me they had a book in them, I'd be a millionaire by now. And he said, no, I really mean it. I feel like I've got a book in me. And so the next 3 years of our relationship was really about writing the book together, having these really deep conversations about God and about his relationship to God. God. So Ellie changed me.
And in a way, it's almost that meeting him was an important part of him actually handing you. I mean, that's the sense that I'm getting, and I don't mean to give you more responsibility, but because I can tell you feel it anyway. But there is the sense that I'm getting that he, as much of the miracle of you surviving was the miracle of meeting him and him handing you this responsibility to take this further. It was really, well, I guess it's as you've said, he was part of saving your life, the prayers that saved your life, and you part of saving a legacy. That too was part of the miracle of that day.
Oh, Howard, absolutely. And nobody can know this story and not see that there is something very miraculous and very strange about our story. And even through the process of writing the book, both together and then after he died, me alone after he died.
That must have been excruciating for you.
It was tough. I won't lie. It was a very hard thing to do. And I had a very difficult decision because the day after he died, I realized we had recorded 6 out of 7 conversations for the book. And I'd already started writing a great deal of the book. And I really was torn as to whether his family would want this or not. You know, like I felt like I had a treasure, but they may have felt like I had something that was way too painful for them to engage with. And as it turned out, they agreed that Ellie had really wanted this book. He would have wanted his teachings to live on past him. And I absolutely felt that responsibility. You know, he saved my life, at least spiritually, and maybe the doctors did physically, but spiritually, yes, and I owed him that debt. I felt that very acutely.
The other thing is, considering that you had so many conversations with him, I would imagine that you could have the 7th conversation even without him being there. Talk to that.
So that was so interesting. I probably had enough material to do it, but his father-in-law, Rabbi Yoram Ullman, who is a rabbinical adjudicator, a kind of judge of sorts, I approached him and asked him whether he would be able to step in to complete the 7th chapter with me. And it was a remarkable effort on his behalf because it was only 2 weeks after Ellie had been killed. And Rabbi Ullman really put all his grief aside and he just focused on this final chapter, and I was able to interview him. And we talked a lot about Ellie, and we reminisced, and we also talked about the things that were in that chapter, which was really about establishing courts of justice and whether, you know, what does justice mean in terms of human justice, but also divine justice. And Rabbi Ullman was an amazing person for me to interview on those topics.
How have people around you reacted to the different Nikki? Because as a journalist, a writer, somebody who was very, very much secular in thinking and approach, we construct our lives around people who are similar to us. How did they cope?
Well, my mum's still living and she doesn't believe in God, so I think she's found it quite
I
awkward.
would imagine. Yeah. Couldn't you
But
be a
I think
rebellious teenager like normal people?
that's exactly right. I think people are surprised, but not. You know, it's that funny thing that they're definitely surprised that I've written quite a mystical and religious book. But they're maybe not that surprised that I would find God, because I think I was always looking. I just didn't know where to look. You know, looked in all the other places that modern, secular, Western women look. You know, yoga and wellness and the hashtag Instagram gurus. I
Right,
just
peptides.
never thought. Yes, exactly. I just never thought to look in my ancestors' tradition.
It's so interesting that. Really, really. So what happens next?
Well, you know, that's so interesting. What a question. I guess what happens next is that my mission really is to spread Ellie's word. And we talked a lot about anti-Semitism, but he was very clear with me that he wanted the book to be about light and love. And his whole message, like, you know, I've taken 280 pages to do it, but I've basically said, his message was just be good, do good, be kind, do kind things. And he was one of those rare people that got up in the morning wondering what kind of good he could do that day, and then went
Love
to
that.
bed that night wondering if he'd done enough. And, you know, that was from a man who was, you know, the chaplain to New South Wales prison and the chaplain to several hospitals. So you don't meet somebody who is on their way to doing good every minute of their waking life in the way that he was. So I guess that's what I'm trying to share with people is, you know, this is a very simple message. Just be kind to one another, spread goodness, give charity, give your time, be present. The book, you know, goes into some ancient ideas that are probably more relevant today than they ever are because we're more distracted, we're more fractured, we're more broken by division. And I think Rabbi Eli's message is about healing that.
It's a difficult thing for you to maybe answer, but you've been through a tremendous, tremendous ordeal. Your health over the number of years, the near death type of experience, the loss of somebody very tragically and brutally who you had become close to. If you could do it all again, would you choose the difficulties, the challenges, and I don't mean the choosing that somebody should obviously, God forbid, die, but the what you've been through, is that something that is valuable to you?
So Rabbi Eli said that people come to God through two ways, either through joy or extreme pain. And most people who didn't get a religious upbringing, they find God through pain. So I think I'm very, you know, I'm the poster girl for that story. But now that I have that relationship with God, I wouldn't give that up for all the suffering in the world. So I would say that probably anyone who's gone through a near-death experience would say something similar, which is you get this, what you get in return for your suffering is the most beautiful, sweet, perfumed feeling of gratitude. And that permeates everything. It permeates your senses, your soul, your being, even your physical body. And I think that sense of gratitude is something that I wouldn't trade even for, you know, completely healthy lungs.
Absolutely incredible. Nikki Goldstein, I do need to leave it there. Nikki's author of Conversations with My Rabbi. It's been an absolute privilege to have this conversation with you. And I can see by the response from listeners, they are moved, they're blown away, they are just absolutely intrigued and drawn into this. We'll share the name of the book, we'll share everything with our listeners. Nikki, I look forward to your journey, because I know that this is just one stop, or one step rather, along the way, and there is no doubt that the mission that you're on is going to be an incredible one. And thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you so much, Howard. Thanks for having me on.